Accession number 32394, Mr. Don Farrington, Real 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Farrington?
Heaton, Norwich in Stockport.
What was the date?
The 4th of June, 1921.
And could you tell us something about your family background? You know, what your dad did for a living? Yes,
my father was a shoe repairer, and my mother worked in a confectioner's most of her life, actually.
And what do you remember about them?
Only that in 1921 I can assume that the economic climate was very bad. That was, but I wouldn't know as a youngster very much about that. But at the same time, I do know my mother, and my father actually was in and out of work due to A, there wasn't as much business in the shoe repairing work at that stage. He did eventually get fixed up with a better job, but the money wasn't very good. And consequently, to keep the family going and the family provided with what food and clothing were necessary, she went out to work, and she worked virtually all her life because my father wasn't able to earn enough money to keep the family going.
How many were there in the family? Is it you?
Just me.
And had he been in the war, the Great War, your father?
My father had been in the Great War. He had shell shock and was... he still had a vivid scar on his cheek, which the splinter of the shell had caught his cheek. That more or less ended his war, but I'm not sure... Oh, I know what the other thing is, which is very important. He became a prisoner of war. And would you believe this, putting it in now, that he was a prisoner of war for 11 months. And what does his son go and do? He was also shot down, and he was a prisoner of war for 11 months.
Now, who'd your father been serving with? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. But I don't know what he went in as, really. He was invalided out, actually. He went in when he was, I don't know what age he'd be, but he obviously wasn't too old to enlist, and eventually, through ill health, he was invalided out of the army.
Now, how did his injuries and his shell shock show themselves after the war? I mean, did it affect his life or your life, what had happened to him?
Well, it's very difficult to say because, to be quite candid, I only knew my father. For one thing, he was quite strict with me initially when I was growing up, and that was, fair enough, accepted. I think he got some kind of... nervous reaction and he also had a very nasty accident which stopped him from working for quite a while when he was knocked down by a car, no fault of his, and fortunately it was at the town hall at Greek Street where the town hall is. There was a policeman on point duty, no traffic lights, and the car coming from one direction, and the policeman got his hand up against this driver to go through, and unfortunately for my father, he took no notice and went straight through and hit him, badly fracturing his leg. Now that upset the family, because A, it meant there was no money coming in, as far as my father was concerned, and from that point it was very difficult because even I was getting going. I was at school in those days, and I could tell that it was a question that I went out getting some, earning some pocket money, doing different things, and we got through, like everything else.
Now, what kind of a house were you living in? What do you remember about it? Were you living in Heaton Norris, were you?
It was a terraced house, actually, in Edgeley. And what it
Edgeley's
was...
Edgeley's where it was, more than Heaton Norris, is it? Or is
Edgeley, no, know. No, that's a different part of it. Heaton Norris is where I was born, actually. This is where we went, and we had rented accommodation in Edgeley. And the owner of the thing was a caretaker at Alexandra School, which is the one I went to. And so he said to her mother, because he knew what financial straits we were in, offered to let her and the three of us stay with him on a rental basis. But as you can imagine, that bringing a youngster up, and also the fact that the times were quite hard financially, it was quite a struggle. And but despite all that, we all managed to survive, and gradually it came a bit better, because I was beginning I was looking at the time to the time I was coming, leaving school.
Well, let's do your education first, and then we'll do your part-time jobs. So tell me about your education. What school did you go to? Tell us about
to Alexandra School, excuse me, in Edgeley.
Now, how did you do at school? You're just till you're 14, I presume?
Yes, I left at 14. I did reasonably well. Wasn't sufficient to high enough score to warrant being transferred to a secondary school, as it was then. It was a question that, as far as I was concerned, I was quite good at two subjects. One was English, and the other was arithmetic or figures, anything to do with figures and writing different things, stories and essays and of that kind. I quite enjoy it.
So you got the basics down?
Yes, yeah.
Now, what about any subjects you didn't like, or were poor at, or was it just...
Well, I think history was one that I didn't take to. I liked geography, because it was meant getting to know more about other countries, but history never seemed to... interest me whatsoever.
What about sport? Were you
now, sports, I was. I've always been very keen on sports. Right the way from being a schoolboy, I played for the school team at football and cricket.
So, what position did you play? Tell us a bit about the football. What did you play?
The football, what was then called inside right. That was the old firm. You don't hear anything like that now. I quite enjoyed that, but my main sport was cricket, and I did very well at cricket.
Batting or bowling?
No, wicketkeeper.
And who did you play for, school or outside? Or
the school, and then when I left school, quite a few of us in the same age group, we were members of Stockport Sunday School, as it then was, which was the largest Sunday school in the world, apparently. However, I played for their team as well. And eventually, as I say, we got a really good side together, and we won a championship, which was for what they call Derbyshire and Cheshire clubs. So it was quite a good, how shall I put it, a good standard of cricket. For amateurs, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I always did with being a wicketkeeper, because the one thing about a wicketkeeper is you're always employed. So
did you bat as well? I mean, were you any good at batting?
No, not really. No, I must confess, I was holding my position because of the keeping wicket, which was okay. But every now and again, I used to get to a point where I was able to, while not making many runs, able to, how shall I put it, keep my end up
for
quite a while.
Lock out for a draw.
Exactly.
So you were stubborn at it. Now, what about, you said you took some part-time jobs just to help the family. Tell us about that, because kids don't do that much.
Perhaps it wasn't, no, it wasn't quite as, it was only, I was only, while I was at school this was, I was only going to, there was a certain shop round the corner from where we lived, and he, this person was wanting me to take some meals from one part of Edgeley to another. They'd have it ready for me and say, well, if you'll take this and deliver it to such and such, and I got so much for that. But it was only a very, very basic sort of thing. But apart from that, I started work properly at about the age I took an examination. I always remember at the Stockport Cooperative Society, they, in those days, to get a clerical job, you had to pass an examination. So I duly took the examination, managed to pass it, and became a junior office clerk at the Stockport Cooperative Society.
Now tell me what, so that was from when you were 14 on, so 1935 on?
I would say about 15 it would be when
so
I got that
1936.
Job. 1936. Yeah. That's right.
And now tell me about your work there. So what did a, what does a clerk do with this?
Well, this was a very good training for me, because one of the jobs I see, because I like figures, I enjoyed figures, one of the jobs I did like was the ability to, you were always connected with figures. It was to do with salaries and wages. And the method of doing that is how I first started getting into the job, as to how to do it, because there were so many forms connected with salaries and wages, beside the ordinary adding up and taking away or whatever. There were plenty of things like regulations and different things appertaining to jobs, which meant having to keep a check on these records and, you know, being fully up to date on, for each individual, what their job in, involved, and other things relating to it. So that, to me, those I'll have to just jump now to the time that I left to go in the forces, with the 21st of October. That would be 1940. Now, up to 1940, that date, I had gone from, not really going from a junior to a medium type of individual who'd learnt so much in the sort of 4 or 5 years up to the 19th when I left, I had to leave, that it was a good training ground, if you're measuring.
So you were largely a pay clerk then, were you? Or did you do other duties?
No,
as
not,
well?
Not a pay clerk.
No, you did other things as well.
I did all the getting together, all the figures that each person was going to be paid for at a particular time on a weekly basis. And as I say, that training did establish me. I got used to it. By the time I was leaving at 19, I got quite proficient at it. But anyway,
what was the office? I mean, was it an office or was it,
was
a big shop?
It was a large office.
Whereabouts in Stockholm?
It was on. Is it all right still?
Yes, it's fine.
It was one of these big central. It was in the right in the heart of Stockport. Do you know Stockport at all? Well, it's, you know, Merseyway as it is now, where all the main shops are there. It was on that particular road called Chestergate. Now, it was the middle, as you go from the railway side into it, on the right-hand side was a big block of buildings. And in that block of buildings on the ground floor was our offices. It was on two sides, and so it was quite a large establishment. One side had the counters, where people, the public came in, and going on the other side, that was where the office clerks were established.
You liked working there, did you?
I did. I must confess, because it was very good, because there were several young ladies in the vicinity, what we call the check office, up the first floor. They were quite quite interesting. I think generally it was a very happy time, I must confess. I wasn't, and the gentleman, I have to add this, who trained me to be a wages clerk, was very patient and he was very understanding. And I think because I grew in confidence on that, that's what started me off on that type of work.
Now, outside of work, did you have Sunday school? You mentioned the Stockport
Sunday
School.
Yes, we had sports again.
Why was Stockport Sunday School so important? I mean, or was it just...
Well, it was one of those things where we had a group of friends, school friends, all growing up together, that lived in the same area in Edgeley. And we had about six of us, always did everything together. It was marvellous, because we all lived in the same situation, we all went to the same school, and we all seemed as though we got on so well. And we used to go to one another's mothers playing cards on a Sunday. But we had a great deal of fun, because each in turn we'd go to one person's mother, and then the following week to someone else's, and that was the socialisation from our point of view.
So what else would you do together, the six of you?
We played football and cricket. We also went to I always remember going to Bellevue to the Speedway. Quite a few of us went down there.
You didn't ride a motorbike, though?
Oh, no, we went on the tram.
Any other big hobbies? Cinema?
No, I can't say there was any other hobbies, actually. My main, and always has been all my life, is sport.
It's so you weren't a pub man? You'd be a bit young as well.
To be quite candid, when I got in the Air Force, it's the first time I started drinking. And it wasn't because it was the Air Force, it was because it was the thing to do when the crew members all went.
I'll come back to that then. I've led you ahead there. What about, were you aware at all of the approach of war in 1938-39? I mean, were you political at all, or did you know what was going on in Germany, or see a threat? Or?
Well, I think, obviously, being a youngster, as I then was, I was 18 going on 19, and there were all kinds of things, but we didn't get all we got, really. There was no, we didn't have a daily paper or anything like that. What we news did we did get was on our PIFCO radio, or wireless as it was then, battery controlled. was mainly where we got the news from. But being anything else, I don't think it registered to me.
So you didn't see it as a big threat hanging over?
I don't think so, because to be quite candid, we had our, how shall I put it, our set pattern of life. The gang of six lads, all doing the same things. And then we got to talking about this, that we knew then, at the time, we'd all agreed that we would have one last get-together, and we go to Blackpool for the weekend.
Now, when's that? Is that after the
That was just before the war started.
Just before the war. Tell me about that weekend in Blackpool, then.
Well, that weekend in Blackpool was hilarious. Well, can you imagine, so we all got in it, fortunately, at the same place. This landlady was very good, although she went, and we didn't bother. She had one or two of them lying on the floor downstairs. She didn't want to see where we wanted to boot. We wanted to boot for six different people, because it takes six bedrooms up, you see. So it became a bit. So we decided we'd go anyway.
And this is August 39, is it? Just before.
This would be August, I would say.
And what did you do then? What was it like, a weekend?
Well,
in Blackpool?
It was hilarious. We used to go to all the different shows or whatever was going, and we also went to mainly to the Pleasure Beach. which was really in its heyday then, and went on the Bobs as it then was, and the
Bobs?
And it used to be called the Bobs. One of
the Big Dipper.
That's the Very Big Dipper, and then the one that came after it. Also, there was another one. I've forgotten what they call that. But we got up to all kinds of things. It was well worth it. But that was the last time we got together as six of us.
Now, tell me about the outbreak of war then, almost as soon as you got, within a week or so of you getting back.
You mean on the actual...
On the 3rd of September. What do you remember of
that? Well, on the 3rd of September, I was then 19 years of age. I was 18, that's right. So I knew then that I was eligible to be called up any time.
But did you hear the broadcast? I mean, Chamberlain on the radio and the rest of it.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about what happened that day that you remember. It was a Sunday, wasn't it?
Well, it was a Sunday, very very much. But it's a strange feeling, really, because I can still remember it was a nice sunny day, and sat in front of this wireless because they were going to make a statement, Chamberlain. And even though I wasn't particularly interested, I just wanted to get out. I think it really didn't come home to me, except they started to mention that as from such a date, which I can't know, they will be bringing compulsory recruitment in for all different services. Anybody who wished to volunteer before, if they were eligible to and hadn't been called up, could do so at the nearest recruitment office. And we come to that. Do you want me to carry on with that? So that was how it was. And in September.
Now, were your parents upset when the war broke out?
Oh, yes, very much so. My mother, particularly. Yeah. And my father wanted to go and recruit right away. And he was in an office state, but anyway, that's a different story. But yes, my mother was very upset because she knew it was inevitable that I was going to be called up. So I said, well, I'm not going to go into the army or the navy.
Now, why not? Why the RAF?
Well, there was a friend of mine who went with me, both of the same. We wanted to go, we wanted to fly. That was the first thing. Neither of us would make good sailors, and neither of us would make good squaddies on the ground either.
Why not, do you think?
Well, first and foremost, we didn't like the idea of constantly marching up and down and going into trench, well, whatever it was you go. You're doing everything virtually on land. And it was... I don't know. Navy, of course, I wouldn't have made a good sailor. So, no, I think the attraction, I think that's what it was. I think the attraction to go in the Air Force and fly, didn't the aspect of danger with being a young man, it doesn't really come into the fact, into the actual thinking about this, that the danger side of it. Because it could have been the same whether you were in the Navy or the Army. Danger is just the same. And we all used to argue, well, I said, if anything goes wrong, we'd only be blown out of the sky. So it would be better than actually suffering a long... having to drown or something like that. So we decided that we would... me and my friend went to volunteer.
That's in September?
That's... No, that would be...
It says June, but that would be before the outbreak of war.
When I volunteered. We volunteered on my birthday. It was a Sunday. It was the 4th of June, 1914. I was 19 years old.
So So that's 1940. So yeah. That's a year after. That's 6 months after the war had started. Then.
Oh yes.
Right.
Yes,
yeah. Then yes. I'm getting confused there.
Yes,
so
that's right.
Now, why did you wait that long, or was that just the date you could do it?
No, it was. We just felt that we'd waited long enough because they were getting close to getting called up, and you had no option. The date was getting, I think, a bit near to the fact that you wouldn't be given any opportunity of which force you'd go into, whether it be the Army, the Navy, or the Air Force. So I think, really, we took the wise decision, I never regretted it, of volunteering before it was too late.
Now, you volunteered as a wireless operator. Why a wireless?
Well, when we first went into the recruitment office, and we said we want to enlist in the RAF, so he said, well, anything in mind? I said, what do you mean? You mean the type of work? He said, well, have you thought about it? I said, well, not specifically yet. We want to know what actually is available. So he said, well, how would you fancy being a wireless operator? I said, well, that would be fascinating. I've always been fond of wireless and radio. So he said, right, we'll put you down for ground wireless operator.
Ground,
yes, that was initially given to me, right? So
did you mind, because you'd wanted to fly?
Yeah, but that didn't come into the equation on that day at first. So we just left that.
Now, what about your medical? You had a medical at Padgate, didn't you?
Medical at
Padgate. Now, what do you remember about that?
I can remember we had a thorough examination, as you can imagine.
Now, that's at the Recruit Reception Centre, Padgate, isn't
it? No, the Recruitment Centre is at Dover Street in Manchester. Dover Street is the one where you just register on, first of all, and apply for if you can enlist. They make a notice of all that, and eventually they let you know when you got to go for a medical.
And what happens?
And that goes to Padgate then.
And what's it at Padgate then?
Now, Padgate is a big section which dealt with recruitment of new people, all having to have medicals, and it's a thorough medical, like checking every part of your body and.
What was it like, the medical? How strict was it?
It was very good. It was, there was nothing strict. They just pass you from one section to another, and they all made notes at every section, obviously, till they eventually got round everything they wanted to know about your health generally, what you did in civilian life, and how did you keep fit, all that sort of thing entered into it. So from the medical point of view, I think the one thing that did them, we had to stay overnight. And the one thing we used to do is to be introduced to. We each had a bed, you see, in the hut that we were provided with. There'd be about six on each side. They all got together. And they're all telling dirty jokes all night long. I've not been used to that sort of language. Yes. it had its humorous side. I had to think after and laugh, actually, all that had gone on. And it was all good-humoured stuff about what they were going to do when they got in the forces, and they won't be able to catch me.
Did you like the other recruits you met there then?
I did. Yeah, I didn't make any particular friends with them at the time because it was only short-lived. It was really like a night.
But you got the impression they were the same sort of lad as yourself?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't know anybody except, I think, just one person. That was all. I can't remember now. But, overall, I think... It was an interesting sort of thing that went on, waiting for the actual official call-up